Israel continues its bombing and shelling campaign in Gaza as the death toll for more than 6 months of indiscriminate attacks nears 33,700. The UK government comes under fire from human rights groups for refusing to end arms sales to Israel amid the ongoing genocide in Gaza. Also in the headlines, the naval force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps seizes a cargo ship in the Persian Gulf with links to the Israeli regime. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. The Israeli military's relentless attacks on the Gaza Strip continue to take more civilian lives. At least 29 people were killed when a home in central Gaza City was hit. Another 20 civilians lost their lives in Israeli strikes on other areas across the coastal sliver. Israeli forces also targeted a number of journalists in the Nusayrat camp, central Gaza, causing casualties. According to medical sources, one of the journalists is in critical condition. More than 33,600 people have been killed in Gaza since Israel began its genocidal war there. Thousands more remain missing. A Geneva-based human rights organization has estimated that over 13,000 Gazans are unaccounted for. Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor says many of those missing are either under the rubble or have been buried in indiscriminate mass graves. Journalist Stavroula Pabst joined us with her take on the worsening humanitarian crisis in Gaza caused by the Israeli genocidal war. She said that the international community needs to work closely to force the regime to halt its massacre of Palestinians.
I think my primary takeaway is that this has been all a devastation, and it's all really been very much targeted against civilian life in Gaza. I think the word genocide is the primary word to underline all of this, and it's quite clear as far as I see it that Israel will continue what it is doing unless it is stopped by the international community. I think that these recent reports, as was reported in Khan Yunis, but also as well as the recent Al-Shifa hospital massacres, the devastation is unilateral. It is total. And, this is a grave, this is to me a grave humanitarian disaster. I think the Flower Massacre also taught us that Israel was quite happy to weaponize hunger in this extent, where people are lining up for aid only to get shot. I think that anybody who's looking at this, that this situation has to understand that the larger goal is not just about the elimination of Hamas, as Israel likes to portray it. What we've been seeing in recent months, 6 months of this, it's devastating. It really needs to be understood that their target is the entirety of Gaza. And to me, it's quite clear that many people, Israeli officials have repeatedly said they're quite okay with clearing the Gaza Strip. Palestinians have been compared to animals. And I think, unfortunately, when genocidal language is repeatedly presented to us, the public, we have to believe it for what it is.
In the Gaza Strip, civil defense volunteers are trying to retrieve the bodies from under the rubble of bombed-out buildings following the withdrawal of Israeli forces from the city of Khan Yunis. As the regime's indiscriminate attacks continue, our correspondent Mutaba Masaba joined us earlier from central Gaza with more details.
In the meantime, when it comes to Khan Yunis city, as you know, that the medical staff and the civil defense crews still this moment are working on extracting more dead bodies and corpses which were left behind the massive destruction inflicted by the Israeli occupation forces in that area. Over the last 24 hours, 10 Palestinian dead bodies were extracted from the rubble of those destroyed houses, particularly in Al-Amal neighborhood located in the western part of Khan Yunis city. So the current situation is still tense across all areas of Gaza Strip, basically here in the central area of Gaza Strip and Al-Nusayrat refugee camp, where the Israeli military operation is still underway with more relentless attacks against that area. What happened in Khan Yunis is horrific because, as you know, that for roughly four consecutive months and the Israeli occupation forces have been attacking, were attacking that area, including the aerial, the land, and even the sea attacks from the sea. The entire residential buildings were destroyed. We are talking about entire residential squares that were wiped out of the map. Percent of the house units and the constructions and the buildings in Khan Yunis city were completely or partially destroyed, knowing that Khan Yunis was the second largest city in Gaza Strip. So now Khan Yunis was literally reduced to be the city of rubble. Wherever you turn your eyes in Khan Yunis city, you would observe and see the rubble and the mounds of debris left behind those constant and chronic attacks that were hitting that area. What happened in Khan Yunis is indescribable, unbelievable, because everything was reached by the Israeli occupation forces on the ground or by the Israeli warplanes was destroyed completely, including the infrastructure, the streets, the residential buildings, the health facilities. Everything was destroyed. Khan Yunis was completely reduced to be an unlivable place.
The military wing of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement has carried out fresh retaliatory attacks on several Israeli cities and settlements in the occupied territories. The Al-Quds brigades targeted the city of Sderot and several settlements surrounding the Gaza Strip with multiple rockets. There has been no reports of damage or casualties so far. The Islamic Jihad movement said the attacks were in response to the Israeli regime's crimes against Palestinians. The Al-Quds brigades also managed to capture an Israeli Skylark drone over the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis. Palestinian resistance fighters from different groups have carried out numerous such attacks on Israeli positions in retaliation for the ongoing Gaza genocide. They've also been putting up stiff resistance to Israeli forces on the ground in Gaza. Reactions are pouring in after the British government said that it will not suspend arms exports to Israel. Now a UK-based organization called the Campaign Against Arms Trade says London is complicit in the regime's war crimes.
David Cameron's announcement that the UK will continue arming Israel is outrageous and illegal given the mounting and indisputable evidence that Israel is committing war crimes amounting to genocide. Rishi Sunak, David Cameron and the rest of the government alongside the UK arms trade are complicit in these war crimes and they should face the consequences of this complicity.
Campaign Against Arms Trade also said the UK government treats Palestinian lives with utter contempt and is only seeking to serve the interests of arms dealers. It also called on British citizens to keep up pressure on the government, as well as the Labour Party, to totally ban weapon sales to Israel. Meanwhile, UK-based charity Oxfam says London's decision is illegal and immoral.
It's illegal, immoral, and inconsistent for the UK to continue to sell arms to Israel when it is clear that UK-made weapons and components are being used in serious violation of international humanitarian law.
Shivji also called on the UK government to work for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and to use this power to ensure aid delivery to the besieged territory. The British Foreign Minister announced on Tuesday that London's position on arms sales to Israel remained unchanged. David Cameron said the government will not block arms exports to Israel by British companies. That after over 600 British legal experts, including judges and lawyers, signed a letter calling on the government to halt arms sales to Israel. Britain supplied over $50 million of arms to Israel in 2022. Well, London people have once again hit the streets to slam Israel's atrocities in Gaza and to call for an immediate halt to its genocidal onslaught against Palestinians. The protesters also condemned the UK government's support for Israel. The naval force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, the IRGC, has seized a cargo ship with ties to the Israeli regime. The vessel was intercepted in the Persian Gulf waters on Saturday. The Portugal flagged ship called MSC Ares is reportedly linked to the London-based Zodiac Maritime Company, which is owned by an Israeli billionaire. MSC says there were 25 crew members on board a container ship captured by the Islamic Republic. The ship has been transferred to Iran's territorial waters in an instant reaction to the seizure of the vessel. The Israeli military said Tehran will bear the consequences for, quote, choosing to escalate the situation any further. When it comes to the state of Palestine, there is an obstacle which stands in the way of stating Palestine as a state, and that is that it has not been officially recognized as one, especially when it comes to the UN. Now, recently, many countries have shown interest in Palestinian statehood due to Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. Let's check out what road Palestine has traveled to when it comes to statehood. Israel has carried out fresh strikes on areas in southern Lebanon. Hezbollah resistance movement has also targeted Israeli military positions. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh joined us earlier from Beirut with more details.
This morning, of course, we woke up to the sound of the warplane. In addition to the sound of the continuous hovering of the drones, the Israeli UAVs, of course, are continuously in Lebanese airspace. But we had a very heavy strikes on the valley of Al Raihan, which is in the Aqlim Al-Fatah area. This area closer to Nabatiyeh. It is considered relatively away from the border. We also had two different artillery fire from the Israelis on the town of Taibe, as well as Hula. They are on the eastern side of the border. But we also had another strike in the valley of Beit Leif, which is on the western side of the border. That was something we could hear from here very clearly. It was very loud sound of shelling. Hezbollah had made it clear yesterday that they will not, of course, be taking the Israeli shelling lightly, especially against areas where you see that there is destruction of civilian houses and residential areas. Despite the fact that we did not have any civilian casualties, usually Hezbollah launches Katyusha rockets when there are civilian casualties, even wounded civilians. Hezbollah seems to be taking things a step further. This is probably a new phase where Hezbollah is sending a message to the Israelis that they will not only just tolerate attacking civilians directly, but even civilian areas or civilian houses that are targeted. And this is why yesterday we saw a salvo of Katyusha rockets against the Baras of Zaoura.
Pro-Palestine conference has been canceled by police in Germany's capital as the European country continues its crackdown on pro-Palestinian gatherings. Speakers from Palestine and around the world were supposed to address the conference. Our correspondent Dieter Feinisch reports from Berlin.
German police have stormed the pro-Palestine conference in the capital Berlin and arrested a number of participants. The Palestine Congress was an important event for the Palestinian solidarity movement in Europe. It was set to be held in the German capital from April 12 to 14. The participants aimed to denounce Israeli apartheid and genocide and Germans' complicity in the genocide of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
We are the Palestine Congress. We accuse the Israeli state of carrying out genocide. And we accuse the German government of supporting, of abetting, of making possible this genocide.
On Friday afternoon, several hundred activists assembled in South Berlin to attend the conference. Soon after the conference started, it was interrupted by the city's police, which had dispatched more than 900 police officers to the area. Outside the conference venue, police officers arrested a man for hoisting a Palestinian flag on a building. The participants inside the conference venue also faced repression. Even the registered journalists were refused entry by the police officers who had been deployed inside the conference hall.
I was in the list, and as the moment as I came, they told me I'm not allowed to enter because there were too many people already inside.
The first part of the conference focused on the history of Palestine.
May marks 76 years since the Palestinian Nakba, 76 years of colonization, of forced exile. However, next month also marks 76 years of resilience, 76 years of a struggle for liberation.
The German police stormed the event during a speech by the Palestinian researcher Salman Abu Sitta, who addressed the conference via video link because he had been not allowed to enter Germany. Police said he was subject to a ban on political activity in the country.
The Palestine Congress was happening. We were watching a video. The police came and shut down the electricity. They didn't give a justification about it. They didn't tell us why. Nevertheless, the police came here, shut it down, said it in the loudspeaker. People are supposed to leave the building right now. You see, they're already taking people.
Chaotic scenes followed. At least two people were arrested inside the hall and several others were interrogated. German Interior Minister Nancy Faeser hailed the police, saying it was good how the police had reacted.
An hour after the start of the conference, German police stormed the conference hall because of a speech on the history of Palestine. In an act of extreme repression, they broke up the conference, declaring it an illegal assembly. However, the Palestine Solidarity Movement vows to continue the conference tomorrow. Dieter Reinisch from Berlin.
France has quickly walked back comments from their foreign minister that Israel could be sanctioned for refusing to allow humanitarian aid into Gaza. Analysts say the move reveals the deep power of the French Zionist lobby. Rami Mazari has more from Paris.
Just one day after France's foreign minister earned praise for saying that sanctions on Israel could be coming over their refusal to allow humanitarian aid to Gaza, he quickly backtracked in a session before Parliament. Many are saying the episode revealed the uniquely powerful sway Zionism has in France.
France, although it has the biggest Jewish community in Europe, has also the most extreme right-wing anti-Palestinian Jewish community in Europe. And this community, this Jewish community in France, has a lot of saying and a lot of control over the media, over the political class. So you have very few people within this community who are protesting what's going on in the Middle East. Not like the United States and Great Britain.
The majority of France's Jews fled from former French colonies in Africa once those countries gained independence in the 1950s and 1960s, and they reportedly brought with them stringent anti-Arab and pro-imperialist views.
In 2019, French Parliament controversially and incorrectly equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, and they are currently reviewing a proposal to fully criminalize anti-Zionism.
They're saying straight, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Therefore, any criticism of Zionism, any criticism of Israel, means you are a criminal because you're an anti-Semite. And so it's killing all debate. Now, all throughout the collective West, but especially in France, the number one threat to freedom of speech is the Zionist movement and the pro-Israeli movement. And I weigh my words because it's very, very dangerous to say something like that in France because you'll find yourself in court.
Since October 7th, support for Hamas and even support for Palestine is often being prosecuted as so-called apology for terrorism. Pro-Palestinian demonstrations were banned nationwide for weeks, leading to thousands of fines on protesters, with protesters arrested and prosecuted for apology for terrorism for as little as carrying a Palestinian flag. Without the ability to openly criticize the policies of Israel, many believe it's difficult to imagine that Paris will reduce its unconditional support for Tel Aviv, no matter how many atrocities and war crimes they commit against Palestinians. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
And that is for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight.
When Israeli occupation forces invaded the Gaza Strip, the territory was divided into two halves, north and south, and Palestinians were separated as well. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, 6 months of relentless bombardment on the Gaza Strip have martyred and wounded over 110,000 people, displaced nearly 2 million out of the 2.3 million inhabitants of the Gaza Strip, and destroyed most of Gaza's residential buildings and infrastructure. But there is one dire consequence of Israel's genocidal war on Gaza that is rarely discussed. Many Palestinian families were divided and cannot be reunited under these horrific circumstances. The Palestine Chronicle spoke with three people who were separated from the rest of their families throughout 184 days of war. Their only hope is to be reunited with their beloved ones soon. Loy Haji told the Palestine Chronicle, "I used to live with my family in the village of Al-Maghra, in central Gaza, on the northern border of Wadi Gaza. At the beginning of the war, my wife and children went to her family's house in Gaza City out of fear of Israeli bombardment." Haji continued, "When Israeli occupation forces invaded the Gaza Strip, the territory was divided into two halves, north and south, and we were separated." He said, "Currently, I am displaced in a tent in Deir al-Balah, while my wife and children are still in Gaza City. I have no information about them as communications are almost cut off in Gaza City." Haji said in tears, "I miss my three children and my wife. I cannot wait to be together under one roof. It's been 5 months since I last saw them, 5 months without hearing my children's voice. I can't sleep thinking about them. I don't even know if they were targeted by an Israeli bombardment." Haji told the Palestine Chronicle that he constantly follows the news to get some information. He said, with a voice that grew more desperate as he spoke, "All I know is that they evacuated to my wife's family home on Sahaba Street in central Gaza City. From the news, I learned that the area was subjected to heavy shelling as Israeli airstrikes hit all areas in the Gaza Strip. I hope to reunite with my family and see them soon." Umm Qasim al-Daya used to live in the Nusayrat camp in central Gaza since he got married, while her family lived on Al-Thalathini Street in Gaza City. After the war, she evacuated with her husband's family to Deir al-Balah, then returned to al-Nusayrat camp about a month ago. Since the end of the temporary ceasefire on December 1st, she had no news about her family. Adaya said in tears, "My husband tries to calm me down, telling me that my family is fine, but I know he's lying to me because he doesn't know anything about them." She continued, "I try to call them repeatedly, but there is no network in Gaza City, and I was not able to reach them." Yusef Kowaik stayed in Gaza City as long as he could. He refused to leave the city where he was born and raised. However, when the Israeli regime bombing intensified, Kowaik's wife decided to send their three daughters and their only son to her family house in Nusayrat in central Gaza. When the situation in Nusayrat worsened, they all evacuated to tents in Rafah City.
Kubeik told the Palestine Chronicle. I occasionally check on them, but it is not easy to communicate. He continued, the phone network is unavailable in Gaza City, while the internet is only available in limited areas. In any case, it is extremely weak. Kubeik knows that in the overpopulated city of Rafah, there are no services, no food, and no medicine. He continued, I fear for my children from these difficult living conditions. The occupation threatens to invade Rafah every day, and I'm worried about these threats. I don't know where my wife will take my children if the occupation forces enter. Kubeik said in tears, I hope the war ends soon and I can reunite with my family. I miss hugging my children. Kubeik, however, wanted to let the Palestine Chronicle know that he did not lose hope. He concluded, this is the hardest war we've been through, but with our resilience, we will prevail and we will overcome all these hardships.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
When we look at the term wasi, you know wasiyat, everybody knows about it. In Farsi, in Urdu, in Gujarati. And that's where you get the word wasi. Basically, wasi means somebody who will be the executor of the will of the deceased. He will handle the estate of the deceased. Now, that's more in a family context. When you talk about the wasi of a leader, it has a broader meaning there. You are talking about somebody who is going to take over the affairs of the community or the nation of the leader who was there before. And it's in that meaning that we see that after the leader has passed away, the wasi becomes the leader. He is the successor there. Now the question comes up, when was Ali appointed as the wasi of the Prophet? There are certain issues in history, we learn about it, we know some of the names, but it's important to know it in detail sometimes, because these days we get questions not only for outsiders, even from insiders. You know, and whenever the doubts are created, you have to make sure your information and the facts of history are very clear for you. Islam started when the Prophet was 40 years old. With the first ayat which came in the cave of Hira. However, during the early days, the mission was a secret. The Prophet would not publicly talk about Islam. It was only for the first 3 years, the mission was a secret. Only selected people would be told about it. In the third year, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala revealed this ayat, which is now in surah number 26, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَنْزِرْ عَشِيرَتَكَ الْأَقْرَبِينَ. O Muhammad, now it's time to, you know, proclaim the message publicly. But start with your own family first. From Banu Hashim. Because you do the tabligh from home first, huh? You don't want to guide all the people who are outside, where you have people in the family, in the extended family, who are misguided. And so the Prophet decided to have a da'wat, a feast. He organized, he invited actually 40 individuals from Banu Hashim to the da'wat. And the purpose was that, you know, and he asked Ali, who was this, just about early teens now, not even baligh, technically speaking. Ali said, you arrange this feast for 40 people. And the idea was that once they have been fed, then Rasulullah will stand up and give his presentation. The way we do here, iftar. Iftar is first, and then we have the lecture after that. This is the sunnah of Rasulullah. But on the first day, what happens? His own uncle, Abu Lahab, who knew about this mission, he knew, and he was the one of the first enemies of Rasulullah, he stood up before even Rasulullah would say anything. And he said, you know, he has bewitched us anyway. He's, you know, just going to waste our time. So he stood up, others stood up, and the gathering was, you know, dispersed. People went away. So then the Prophet invited them again next day. And this time Rasulullah made sure that, you know, he gets the opportunity to speak. And this is where he says, oh, the sons of Abdul Muttalib. He says, I don't know anyone among the Arabs who have come to you with a news better than what I'm going to present to you. The message that I have is better for your dunya and akhirah. And this is where then he says, who among you is willing to be my supporter in this mission? So that he will become, فَأَيُّكُمْ يُوَاذِرُنِي. Who among you will help me عَلَى هَذَا الْأَمْرِ, on this issue, أَنْ يَكُونَ أَخِي وَوَصِيِّ وَخَلِيفَتِي فِيكُمْ. So that he will be given this position of becoming my brother, my wasi, my, you know, successor or executor of my will after me, وَخَلِيفَتِي, and my successor among you. Nobody stood up. Except the youngest one, Ali. And this is where Rasulullah says, sit down. Again he gives the opportunity. But the only response came from Ali. And that is where Rasulullah actually put his hand on the neck, on the shoulder of Ali, and he says, I would like to declare to you all, إِنَّ هَذَا أَخِي وَوَصِيِّي وَخَلِيفَتِي فِيكُمْ فَاسْمَعْ لَهُ وَعَتِيعُ. I would like you to know that this Ali, he is my brother, وَوَصِيِّي, he is my wasi, and he is my khalifa and successor among you. Therefore, فَاسْمَعْ لَهُ, listen to him, وَعَتِيعُ, and obey him. This is where we see that, you know, the Prophet was very explicit, very clear. You know, many times people say, oh, you know, wasi and khalifa, these are all symbolic words there. Didn't have any implication. No, he says, فَاسْمَعْ لَهُ, listen to him, وَأَطِيعُ, and obey him. The audience understood the meaning clearly. Because Abu Lahab took this opportunity to laugh about it, and he joked to Abu Talib, and he said, oh, Abu Talib, your nephew Muhammad is now asking you to listen and obey your own son. So Abu Lahab understood the implication, and the Muslims are still debating what does it mean. And this is where we have to realize, when people say, oh, it wasn't clear, it was clear there for the people who were in the front, that you have to listen to him and you have to obey him. And when was that? This is the first formal declaration of Islam to the Ummah. I don't want to go into the references and details and the sanad of this. I would just refer you to my book. I have a book called Shiaism, Imamat and Vilayat, which was published in 1999, and it has an entire chapter on this discussion. And what are the sources, historical sources, and the Sanad going to this event. Now, why do we talk about this? Because if you go and pick up any popular biography of Rasulullah, written by the Muslims, you will not really see these things there. And somebody will come and say to our young people, oh, you know, he didn't say anything. This is right in the beginning, when Ali is not even a baligh yet. And Rasulullah is introducing him as Hadha Akhi wa Wasayyi wa Khalifati. What else do you want? Ghadir is much later on. You have to connect. The formal declaration of Islam is in Da'wat al-Ashira, and the final declaration of the faith is in Ghadir.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حالي حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kHz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The limelight.
The head of UNICEF, Catherine Russell, has talked about a staggering rate of child deaths in Gaza, not seen in any conflict in the world. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The French national broadcaster France 24, France 24, has covered this story and tells us more. In an interview with France 24, Catherine Russell, the executive director of the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, sounded the alarm about the plight of children in Gaza after more than 5 months of Israel's brutal war. The head of UNICEF said an estimate of 13,450 children killed in the Palestinian territories since 7th of October last year is probably on the low side. She noted that many more children are trapped in the rubble or are wounded and often separated from their families. Catherine Russell also discussed the incredibly dire situation regarding hunger in Gaza. According to a United Nations-backed food security assessment, half of Gaza's population is experiencing catastrophic hunger, with famine projected to hit northern Gaza any time between now and May without urgent intervention. This is very much a man-made problem, Russell told France 24. All of us in the international community have to do better here and make sure that we can get aid to these children in Gaza. She added, "We cannot have children starving to death in Gaza. That is not acceptable." Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story. The staggering rate of child deaths in Gaza has not been seen in any other conflict in the world, according to UNICEF Executive Director Catherine Russell, speaking on Sunday, 17th of March. "I think these numbers that we're seeing out of Gaza are just staggering. We haven't seen that rate of death among children in almost any other conflict in the world. It's really shocking," Catherine Russell said during a television program. "More than 13,000 children have been killed, thousands of others injured, trapped under rubble, or have lost their parents," Russell said, adding, "It's a horrifying situation." Catherine Russell added that the profound impact on children in Gaza stemming from the stress, grief, loss, and fear they experience is bound to have lasting effects on them and potentially on their own offspring as well. "We know now that children are dying from malnutrition in Gaza," she said. "I've seen a lot of children, unfortunately, in my job around the world who suffer from malnutrition. It's a shocking thing to see. Essentially, the body starts to consume itself because it has nothing else, and it's a painful, painful death for children." She added that even if therapeutic feeding can be provided to those in need, they often endure lifelong consequences, such as stunted growth, which also affects their cognitive abilities. "It's a lifelong challenge for these children if they survive," she said. Israel has waged a deadly military offensive on Gaza since 7th of October last year. More than 31,600 Palestinians, many of them women and children, have been killed in the enclave, and nearly 73,700 others have been injured, amid mass destruction and shortage of basic necessities. The Israeli war on Gaza has pushed 85% of Gaza's population into internal displacement amid a crippling blockade of food, clean water, and medicine. Iran's Press TV has also covered the same story. UNICEF Regional Director for West Asia and North Africa has warned that more children in Gaza will die due to impending famine as the Israeli regime continues to impede aid operations in Gaza. Adel Khodr urged Israel to open all border crossings to allow aid into Gaza Strip, citing the Integrated Food Security Phase classification, recent report warning of an imminent famine in Gaza. The Integrated Food Security Phase classification, or IPC, findings on Gaza confirm what we have been warning about of impending famine for months now. The world's inaction is shocking as more children succumb to a slow death. All border crossings must open now to allow unfettered access to humanitarian aid for the population of Gaza, Adel Khodr wrote on social media post. The IPC, a group that includes the World Food Programme and the World Health Organization, warned that famine is imminent in northern Gaza Strip, with people suffering catastrophic levels of hunger. It said 1.1 million people, half of Gaza's population, are experiencing catastrophic food insecurity. According to the IPC, the Integrated Food Security Phase classification, virtually all households are skipping meals every day, and adults are reducing their meals so that children can eat. In two-thirds of households in northern Gaza, the report said people went entire days and nights without eating at least 10 times in the last 30 days. In southern Gaza Strip, this applies to one-third of the households. In a statement published on Monday, the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, Administrator Samantha Power said the IPC report is a reality for the population of Gaza. Samantha Power added that there have been only two famine declarations in the 21st century, which marks a truly tragic milestone. The catastrophic levels of hunger and malnutrition described in the IPC report should be unimaginable in the current era. But for hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza, this is reality, Samantha Power said. Martin Griffiths, the United Nations top relief coordinator, said on X that the international community should hang its head in shame for failing to stop the famine in Gaza. We know that once a famine is declared, it is way too late. The head of UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, Philip Lazzarini, also expressed his disappointment as he was refused entry into Gaza, where he was scheduled to enhance the humanitarian response in the territory. This man-made starvation under our watch is a stain on our collective humanity, Philip Lazzarini wrote on a post on X. Meanwhile, the president of Iran said Ebrahim Raisi has called for a serious practical step to stop the Israeli regime's ongoing attacks on war-torn Gaza. The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, was speaking during his New Year message to Asian countries celebrating Nowruz, the Iranian New Year. The Iranian president said Nowruz is a message of peace and peaceful coexistence and also a symbol of reconciliation. The Iranian president said this year, we, the countries of the Nowruz Civilization Zone, are celebrating this auspicious occasion while the oppressed and powerful people of Gaza are facing the brutal attacks of the usurper Zionist regime and are also under a complete siege, being deprived of their access to basic healthcare and basic facilities and are in danger of starvation and famine. The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, said, it is our humanitarian duty to use our capabilities to take serious practical steps to stop the attacks of the Zionist regime and send humanitarian aid to the oppressed people of Gaza. The Iranian president sent a message addressed to the leaders and peoples of the countries of the Nowruz Civilization Zone. In a separate New Year message addressed to the Iranian people, President Raisi hailed Gaza's resolute resistance against the brutal Israeli onslaught. He said the global powers used all their might to try to destroy the 2 million people of Gaza. Meanwhile, the Islamic resistance in Iraq has said its fighters have attacked Ben Gurion Airport twice in the past week using drones. In a statement on Wednesday, 20th of March, the Iraqi resistance confirmed its attack on the Israeli regime, which is currently waging a genocidal war on the people of Gaza. The fighters of the Islamic resistance in Iraq at dawn on Tuesday have targeted Ben Gurion Airport in the Zionist regime using drones. The resistance also affirmed its commitment to strike the enemy's stronghold as part of its second phase of operations in support of the Palestinians of Gaza. In response to the Israeli massacre of Palestinian civilians, the second phase of the resistance's operations has started, which include the enforcement of a blockade on Israeli maritime navigation in the Mediterranean Sea and putting Israeli ports out of service. The resistance also attacked the same airport on 12th of March using drones. The Islamic resistance in Iraq says it will continue its attacks on Israeli targets until Israel stops its genocidal war in Gaza. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
March 12th, 2024. In my opinion, not a day should pass in the Islamic world where an individual fails to recite verses from the Quran. We all need to recite it. I have said this on numerous occasions that we need to read the Quran as much as possible. So recite as much of it as is feasible. Some people read five juz. the Quran is divided into 30 juz or equal sections a day, and others read one juz a day. Some read one hizb, half a juz, a day. If you are unable to do that, then at least read one page or half a page a day, but make sure you read some of it. The Quran must be recited. In the statement that I made, recitation of the Quran is for the heart of the reciter, but it is not limited to that. Both the reciter's heart and the hearts of the community should be illuminated and enlightened by the recitation of the Quran. Almighty God told His Prophet, "We have sent the Quran in discrete parts so that you may recite it for the people a little at a time." Chapter 17, verse 106. And in numerous other verses, the verses that I have already mentioned, it states that you should also recite it for the people. This is your job. We read the Quran for ourselves at home, but what you do is a higher level. You recite the Quran for other people. This is very valuable. Recognize your worth and appreciate the value of your work.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Another important point to consider is the matter of contemplation. The Quran must be read with contemplation. Of course, contemplation has levels. Contemplation involves delving deeply into the Quran's meaning beyond its outward beauty. Its appearance is elegant and its interior is deep. Nahjul Balagha, Sermon 18. This appearance is the beauty of your work, recitation of the Quran, and the words and beauty of the Quran itself. The deep interior is that which is obtained through contemplation. The more you contemplate on, pay attention to, and understand the issues surrounding a verse or a word, the more knowledge and concepts you will learn from it. This is contemplation. It is a blessed book that we have sent down to you so that they may contemplate its signs. Chapter 38, verse 29.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. Guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all that were wrong. I wanna thank you for bringing me home.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.